City of Melbourne, this is not a good outcome.
Are there any other speakers against the motion? Are there any speakers for the motion? Acting Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your work on probably if we go back to the top is a good idea, because that's where we essentially start with our position. And just to echo Councillor Francis Gilley, and also just speaking to our submitters, and thank you, Bernard, for your correspondence on this matter. And I just pick up on one issue there with our submission from Gerry, though. Sort of the idea that we've got a sort of a gentleman's agreement, if you like, doesn't really speak to how I've seen council operate in the last 5 years. Indeed, we took a really strong position on East West Link. We didn't support the project. We prosecuted the arguments of our ratepayers and our residents. And indeed, the Westgate Tunnel process, we have gone through the hearings process with all the legal costs that that entails. And sometimes that can be criticised by sectors spending money on sort of defending or prosecuting a position. But we really do go into bat for our strategies, our plans, our policies, our initiatives, and indeed our desire for the City of Melbourne and Melbourne as a whole really to move to mass transit. So from a first principle, starting from the start, the position is up there for all to see. That we have talked on numerous occasions about the negative impacts of this project, and we don't support the project. But equally, our ratepayers expect us to, when a project is proceeding, to make sure that we're advocating for the position of the city, and then to try and get some outcomes from the project which are beneficial. Councillor Francis Gilley alluded to the fact that we've been working to that end. I had a meeting with the Treasurer and the Planning Minister this morning, and when we look at those 10 legacy projects, it is pleasing to see that there's been substantial progress on 7 of the 10 legacy projects and actions. Shared commitment to these actions, obviously, while acknowledging the disagreement about the project fundamentally. So they're acknowledging that we don't support the project, but then coming to the party on mitigating some of those impacts. And they're not insignificant. We're talking about $50 million for streetscape upgrades, Spencer Street and places like Franklin Street. We're talking about Mooney Ponds Creek, the transfer of VicTrack land to the City of Melbourne to facilitate greater open space. That's indeed 4 parcels of land, which is an excellent outcome. The Council Arden Depot site, they are putting money to the VPA to work with us and Citywide on finding an alternative for that site, because it is such a prime site for the Arden vision as it comes to fruition. There is a commitment which is very pleasing. I know it doesn't go all the way to what our submitters wish to see, but I think critically, and I'll read this, there is currently a North and West Melbourne scoping study underway led by Transport for Victoria and Council participation. It is not proposed to upgrade local roads to take additional traffic in North and West Melbourne. The purpose of the extended Wurundjeri Way is to enable traffic to bypass the city and reduce pressure on Spencer Street. Our modelling has showed that there will be significant impacts on the city, but that commitment to not just enlarge local roads to take that additional impact is a really good step in the right direction. I apologise for the length of that, but that is a pleasing step in trying to mitigate the impacts of this project.
Thank you, Senator Mayor. Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. I too would like to speak on the Westgate Raised Freeway issue, which has been misspelled in the report as tunnel. I think the report is outstanding. I thank officers again for all of the work that they've done on this. The 10 requests of government are the right requests. I've been mortified, like many constituents have been mortified, that the proposal has gone on full steam ahead despite the overwhelming evidence that the impact on traffic in the inner city and North Melbourne and West Melbourne will be completely unreasonable, that this is a huge amount of money that's being spent on a road project rather than planning much-needed transit, that this is a project that is going to have a massive impact on our waterways, particularly the Maribyrnong River and the Moonee Ponds Creek. And as I've said on many debates in this place or upstairs before, I oppose the project because it is not going to contribute to a less congested city and a healthier city. It's going to do the opposite. But it's not our project, and we need to figure out what our role is in that context. And much as it would be easy and straightforward to simply sing from the rooftops as loudly as possible that the project must not go ahead, and that is my preferred position, certainly, this is an election year, and we have to acknowledge that the Premier has put all of his cards on the table and said that this is the project that he's going to have to get through. Even the most remarkable comments that a disallowance of the planning scheme approvals in the Upper House of Parliament would just be bypassed as well. So it's a high-stakes game, and I'm glad that we've beefed up the recommendation before us and reiterated that we are opposed to the tunnel. But again, I feel almost as powerless as many of the constituents are who don't want this project to happen. And so we have to acknowledge that, yes, there's a few ways we can get things done. One is to make public statements. The other is to try and negotiate with the government as much as possible. There are reasons why we go so well with Metro. It's because it's 100% shared council-state policy, whereas this is 100% opposed state council policy. And so, of course, the state's not willing to just generously say, we'll approach this the exact same way we approach things with the Metro Tunnel and cooperate. They're not going to do that. But we can do everything that we possibly can to negotiate the best possible outcome. I thank the CEO, Acting Lord Mayor and others who are trying to do that behind the scenes. I thank officers who have tried to do that publicly by putting out the important information such as in this report. But I think we do need to make the case as strongly as possible, including in the media over coming weeks in particular, and in this election year, that things like the destruction of the Moonee Ponds Creek corridor, or the lack of adequate planning for a proper, healthy linear park, the full length of the Moonee Ponds Creek, is not just going to be a bad outcome in relation to this project, but it's going to utterly undermine all of the urban renewal projects that we are seeing in Macaulay, in Arden, in Egate, and Docklands as well, for that matter. There are so many obvious things that we need to keep pursuing. It's unfortunate that we can't just make these suggestions and that they get adopted like they should, because they are very obvious to me, but the way to make change is a lot more difficult than that. So there is a long way to go, and we are going to have to work as hard as we can publicly in chambers like this and behind closed doors to get things done. But yes, as I've said many times, this is a dud of a project.
Are there any other speakers for the motion? In concluding, I would just say thank you for all of those that, well, they don't want it, are working on it. So, Acting Lord Mayor, officers, CEO. I would just say that in a meeting this week, and I think there's, for many people, this is part of the pain. I was in a meeting with one of our officers who's been in the organisation nearly 30 years, and he has spent his life work, as he named it, calming these streets, to make the streets more livable over 30 years. And his life's work will be undone by this, and he's not alone. I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? Unanimous, thank you. I now call on...
Thank you, sorry.
Lord Mayor Aaron Wood to resume the role of chair for the remainder of the meeting.
Thanks, Councillor Francis Gilley. And I'm going to ask for your indulgence and move to adjourn for 2 minutes. Can I have a seconder for that? Thank you, Councillor Riley. All those in favour? Not in favour of the adjournment? Thank you. I declare that carried unanimously. I declare the meeting resumed at 7:41 p.m. This concludes the reports from management to be considered in open session. There are three items of general business to be considered in open session. The first is 7.1, the post-travel report by Councillor Rohan Leppert, Hamburg, Brussels and Barcelona in October 2017. And I call on a councillor to move a motion. Councillor Leppert, is that seconded? Councillor Riley? Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Chair. Because I haven't spoken enough, I thought I'd put three motions in a row on the agenda now. I was most fortunate to be chosen or approved by my colleagues, and thank you very much, to be part of the City of Melbourne, and in fact it ended up being broader than that, City of Melbourne delegation to Hamburg as part of the EU World Cities exchange. The Hamburg delegation has already been here and they will be back here again soon. I'm very grateful to the EU for funding much of that process. The ability for the five-person delegation from the City of Melbourne to meet with counterparts in Hamburg and to also learn as much as possible about how urban renewal, particularly in innovation districts in Hamburg, but also in Barcelona, is done. We are, of course, planning our own innovation district in City North at the moment. That matter's been the subject of council debates previously. Hare Krishna's coming in for this important debate. That's good. We need to learn from other cities who have been doing this for a very long time, cities who have done things well, cities who have done some things well but some things not so well. I'm very encouraged by some of the things we've learned about planning controls in Barcelona, and the back page of the report will talk about that, but as well some of the approaches that a harbour city like Hamburg has taken to urban renewal and the very exciting integration that city government has with their universities and the innovations into planning on a place-based approach that those technological innovations have. There is a lot for us to learn there. There are opportunities for more partnerships with the Hamburg government in future, and that will be very much for them through the EU to drive on their next delegation here. But I've been very privileged on behalf of Council to be part of that delegation, and there's certainly a lot more to be learned, and this has been a fantastic eye-opening experience and helps us plan our innovation district going forward.
Councillor Rowe.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert, for representing us. It's an outstanding report with great photos.
Thanks, Councillor Holly. Any other speakers to this one? If not, I'll put it to the vote.
I just forgot to,
you want to close?
Thank the person who, you know, wrote most of the report. I was not the only note taker on the tradition. I was joined by our Director of City Operations, Martin Cutter, and Acting Director of City Strategy, Michelle Fitzgerald, and I think Claire Ferris-Miles from Port Phillip is in here as well. So we were certainly well represented, and I thank Michelle for writing most of my report.
I'm absolutely sure you missed someone out there, Rohan, but anyway. I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? I declare that carried unanimously. The next item is 7.2, notice of motion from Councillor Leppert on the Apple Store at Federation Square. And I now call on Chris Thrum, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor Aaron Ward, councillors, men and women of the Kulin Nation. This is the land of the Wurundjeri, and that's where the Yarra building is located as well. I'd like to thank Councillor Rowan Leppert for initiating this motion, and I support it. I think all councillors and the Acting Lord Mayor should support this as well. It's a very important issue. It's a moral issue in regards to the direction of our city and the way it's going forward in Federation Square. There's a lot of concern in the community about this matter. I'd like to thank Susie O'Brien and Dimity Reid for the articles that they've written in mainstream media highlighting the serious concerns that the community has about this proposal. Big concern about Amendment C314. I'm not in favour of these 5 second to midnight amendments introduced in state parliament, negating the proper procedures that should be undertaken in regards to planning matters in the City of Melbourne. I want to talk about people. We've got quality people in the planning team. This is their bread and butter, okay? They should be properly vetting this proposal and how it impacts upon the citizens of Melbourne. An architect wrote to me in regards to this design, and he said, it's incompatible with the cohesive nature of the rest of Federation Square. But his question was, did they intend it to be incompatible? I mean, in the 21st century, in the Twitter sphere, it's like WTF question mark, exclamation mark, OMG, ROFL. What we've got here is a runaway horse. A runaway horse with no jockey on it, and it's inappropriate that this should be occurring. We should retain Yarra Building, and it should not be demolished. When the good men and women who built Federation Square stood, when the Federation Square was opened, and they looked around at all the buildings, if you had told them, oh, by the way, Braxy would say, by the way, we're going to demolish that building in about 16 years, they wouldn't believe him. Not a good idea. So in conclusion, I think Apple have a tremendous opportunity to show great civic leadership and responsibility and work with the City of Melbourne, State Government of Victoria, and find a more appropriate solution to bring in a brilliant global flagship store in Melbourne.
Thanks, Chris. I now call on Narelle Launt to speak. Narelle? No. Emily Keating. Emily Keating. Yes, we've talked for too long. I see that our submitters have dropped off. Corey Corbett. Wow, okay. Tanya, and I apologise for the mispronunciation of your second name. Is it Davidge? Davidge. Thanks, Tanya.
Councillors, I thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of this motion. My name is Tanya Davidge and I'm the president for a newly formed group, the Citizens of Melbourne. And we're an association of concerned citizens who have publicly expressed opposition to the Andrews government's decision to replace Fed Square's Yarra building with an Apple store. Over the weekend, we facilitated over 800 submissions relating to this motion. We did think it was a shame that you didn't read them all out. And they do deserve to be heard. Between us, we represent substantial expertise in the built environment and tens of thousands of petitioners on change.org who all signed opposing this decision. We believe that Fed Square is Melbourne's most important civic meeting place and it belongs to all Victorians. Replacing the Yarra building with an Apple megastore is not in the public interest. We're very gravely concerned about the lack of public consultation and the lack of transparency around this process. And while we support this motion that you're putting forward, we believe that it does not address a fundamental issue. We're concerned that the planning amendment is being used as a tool to circumvent the civic and cultural charter governing Fed Square, and by extension, the civic nature of the square itself. The Charter clearly defines the civic and cultural aims of Fed Square and the role of its retail tenancies. An Apple store neither represents nor meets the objectives of the Charter. We request that in the petition to the State Parliament, the City of Melbourne identify the Charter as a key document against which decisions around Fed Square are measured, as was always intended. Any decisions made that affect the public and civic nature of Federation Square must be public, transparent, and align with the objectives of Fed Square's charter, and also, I would suggest, the civic interests of the city. We feel very strongly that this is our square and our city. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Adrian Jackson? Okay. And I now call on a councillor to move a motion with respect to this matter. Councillor Leppett.
I'll move a motion. Part four has been tweaked, but it's on the screen. I will move that motion.
And I call for a seconder, Councillor Francis Gillie. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I agree we should have listed all 847, was it? 847? Thank you. Submitters' names, but we'd probably still be on the first agenda item and maybe no one would like that. But I'd like to acknowledge up front right now that 847 people have made submissions, and whilst maybe some of them might have been form letters, that is a spectacular number. It's more than the 300 we received on Palace, the 300 we received on equal marriage, and I think it's probably a record for quite some time. I'm not sure how long that record would have stood, but I acknowledge first and foremost that this is an issue that the public feels very strongly about, and certainly they've made their thoughts clear to councillors. Now, amongst those 847 submitters, the number of submitters who are opposed to the process to put an Apple store in Federation Square, the way this decision was made, is 847. That's a pretty good rate, I think. Again, it shows just how strongly felt this issue is in the community at large. Of course, when Federation Square was proposed, designed, planned, constructed, and the subject of many, many, many debates on the front pages of papers for a long period of time, it was highly controversial. Radically new architecture in an area that drastically changes the way our city looks is always going to be controversial. It's impossible to come up with a project at scale like this without there being some level of controversy. But just when Melburnians had decided that, after all, we do love Federation Square, it is a bit quirky, it is uniquely Melbourne, and it is wonderful, we're kind of back to where we were 16 years ago, which is to be outraged about the proposed changes to it. The difference here is that these negotiations have happened between the state government and Apple for two or more years, if you count the early days as well, without a skerrick of information being made publicly, and then the decision, as submitters have said here today, to introduce an Apple store into Federation Square, to be completely signed off and approved before it was announced to the public. The planning scheme amendments towards the end of December, which the minister exempted himself from the normal notice and exhibition and panel requirements of a planning scheme amendment process, which is entirely his right to do under the Act, it's legal, infuriated Melbourne's, and of course it infuriated Melbourne's. I am surprised that the State Cabinet and Apple collectively did not anticipate the backlash that making this decision in this way would have. Of course, the Planning Minister needs to have the discretion to make changes to the planning rules as the need arises, but that discretion has to be exercised very carefully, otherwise the community, the public across Victoria, their faith in the planning system is going to go up in smoke if it hasn't already. So I worry about the ability of Cabinet to think on balance that this was the right way to go about things. By all reports through the press, for the Planning Minister to be rolled in the way his stroke of the pen was used to approve this planning scheme amendment. I think it is inevitable and only natural that the potential brand damage, if you like to call it that, to Apple is being played out continually this way. I will say that if the state government and Apple think that this project, that this controversy is going to go away and that it can be managed and that they can crash through by tweaking the design rather than going back to the public and hearing what the public would like, or at least exhibiting the plan for a while and attempting some sort of a redesign process with some public input, they're sorely mistaken. This problem is not going to go away until the state government realises that the process around making this decision, even more so than the jarring design itself or the clash with the civic and cultural charter or the secrecy of the negotiations with Apple, but the process, cutting out the public of Melbourne, the Victorian public, from the entire process and then just announcing the change to Melbourne's premier public space as a fait accompli, that process is the thing that we must undo. Otherwise, this controversy is simply going to stick here forever. The Civic and Cultural Charter has been raised. It is a good document. We endorsed this document 15 years ago with the state government. That charter sets out the preferred uses of Federation Square. In its early days, it was painstakingly pored over when, for example, the 7-Eleven was proposed to be put in to Federation Square, as it should be. These decisions should be difficult to make. The difference, of course, between the 7-Eleven and the proposed Apple Store is that the 7-Eleven is incredibly discreet compared to what is proposed here. But the Civic and Cultural Charter this time, 15 years later, was barely even considered. I do wonder how it can be that the charter, which should be guiding decision-making in Federation Square, has been overlooked over the course of the last 15 years. It does raise questions for me about the way in which decisions are made at Federation Square. I've always questioned the governance model for Federation Square. Driving a profit here is possibly not what we should be expecting a wholly owned company of the state government to be doing. It's a public space. Maybe it shouldn't be a profitable public space, but that's a separate debate. I'm no architect, so I'm not actually going to talk today about the jarring design, although I suppose adding the word jarring in there is a testament that I'd like to. This comes down to one thing. We need to ensure that the public of Victoria has their say over Melbourne's premier public space. Otherwise, the project should not go ahead. We should be encouraging the Parliament to do what they can to stop this from happening. I hope we don't get there. And I've watered down part four to show that we are not going to be overly officious with members of the Legislative Council to direct the Cabinet. But I do want to send the strongest possible message from this place that decisions like this over Melbourne's important public spaces cannot be made in the dark and cannot be made in this way.
Councillor Francis Gilley.
Thank you. Well, I agree with all of that. And so I've got no comment on the design, what's there or what might come, because I just have no qualifications. I think it'd be great to have a flagship Apple store in Melbourne City. It'd be phenomenal. And I don't even know that it shouldn't be in Federation Square. What I do know is that this space has become the de facto heart of the city. And that's clear, whether you liked it or not. It's the only place. I mean, we don't have a city square at the moment. It's become a hole in the ground for a train station, which is exciting. But so it is the heart of the city. It's where we imagine we will go to meet. The interesting thing is the city, we can't loan it to you. We actually have to phone up someone to see if we can book it, and often it's busy. We actually have no opportunity to think about that heart of the city in terms of the way it supports the city, in the way it would look, in the way it might grow, the way it might change, who might be there, what kind of commerce might be appropriate or not appropriate. So I like you, Tanya, think that we are in a situation at the moment where after 16 years, potentially, as you mentioned, the governance model of having a body that's reporting to try and make it work and make some money from this space to report back to the state government has passed. It has just had its time. And 16 years on, maybe it is time to recognise this is the heart of the city and to put the heart of the city in the hands of people who actually are willing to consult and have a conversation about these issues, as we have tonight. Now, all too often on those conversations, of course, we do have to say this is a ministerial referral and it hasn't been open to public debate anywhere else, so we will hear it, but there's nothing we can do. I'm afraid on this subject, there is nothing we can do, and we are having the debate. I do not think that's appropriate for the space that's become the heart of this city, and I do really support and I'm grateful for this motion.
Any speakers against? Any other speakers for? Councillor Watts.
Yes. It seems to me we're in furious agreement. This is all a very bad idea. I've actually written to four ministers myself arguing that this is a very bad idea and the execution of it is very bad too. Let's just hope we have some sense within our state government to respond to the people and to respond to its state Capital City Council.
Thanks, Councillor Watts. Any other speakers to this one? Councillor Lee Lu.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard, for moving this motion. And look, I welcome any international business coming to Melbourne. I think it makes what Melbourne such an international city. I like the fact that, you know, there's a secondary, I guess, use of it, especially the education part. And, you know, if what's being proposed in Milan is true, which is also a sister city of ours, it'll be a great addition to Melbourne. I guess the process, the fact that, you know, the public was not consulted, and the fact that other councillors and also, you know, even the chair of planning was not informed of it, I think that's bad judgment. I think also, do we really need to knock off something to have, you know, why can't we have both, right? Do we, you know, do we really need to destroy something to build something? For me personally, look, I think whenever you touch Federation, and, you know, for me, Federation Square, when I look at it, I look at our logo, City of Melbourne logo, and I think that it's very reminiscent of Federation Square. So for me, you know, it's to tackle Federation Square, it's really kind of also attacking, you know, the City of Melbourne logo, which I'm very, very passionate about, right? I do very, very much appreciate Councillor Leppard's point four, the watered-down version of it. I don't think we are in a position should be directing to the Legislative Council in terms of what we do. I think we can always use our influences, and also it's good to hear Councillor Acting Lord Mayor and also the CEO doing behind the scene. But any time, you know, you have that. And I was actually really against that, but I think even though points one, two, and three, I think outweighs that, and that's why I'm very happy to support this.
Councillor Rees.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I will be brief. Look, I guess as a group of councillors, we come from different backgrounds and have different perspectives on issues, but we are, I think, uniformly in agreement on this one. Look, there'll be some members in the community I know who can never come at the idea of Apple being at Federation Square. Look, I think on balance, provided that it's done in the right way, it could be a good thing for Federation Square. And I do note that the chair and CEO of Federation Square would welcome Apple setting up a flagship store. And I think everybody universally thinks that it would be a terrific thing for the city to see that investment by Apple in the City of Melbourne. But as is pointed out in this motion, there are two very, very significant issues. The first is the design of the store. I've got to admit, I haven't run into a single person who actually likes the design. It reminds me of a Pizza Hut pagoda. I just think it's like something that's rolled off an Apple store production line, and they've just plonked it in the middle of the City of Melbourne's premier civic square. So I very strongly support the notion that there should be a design review. We should remember that the Yarra Square wasn't just put there for no reason. It was put there because it helped contain the square and actually created a square. And whether you like or love or loathe distinctive geometric design of Federation Square, it is consistent. And so this sort of Pizza Hut pagoda is completely out of context with the current design of, you know, at what is now our famous square. On the community consultation front, you know, if you're going to run a bulldozer through a building in the city square, that's something that to me you should consult with your community about. And if you don't consult with making fundamental changes to your premier public gathering place, well, what do you consult on? So I very strongly support the view that we should have a community consultation process. And I would refer back to the West Melbourne Structure Plan, which we discussed earlier this evening, which has some aspects in it which are hard to explain to the community. We're upfront about the fact that more development is coming to that part of the city. But we went through a process, we put the time into that, and now we've got to a position where over 70% of the people in our community support where we've landed. So you can make difficult decisions in government, decisions which involve compromises, and you can bring the community with you. And I would encourage the state government to reflect on that when it comes to what is happening and being proposed at Federation Square. I point also finally that there's a new station entrance as part of the Melbourne Metro that's going to be built right next door to where that Yarra building change is being proposed, and so that could be a good opportunity for some broader consultation around Federation Square.
Thanks, Councillor Rees. I'll make a few comments before I ask if there's any further speakers and then come back to the mover. I think Chris Thrum always manages to hit the nail on the head for me on many items that come before us. So for me, I agree with Councillor Leppard and with my colleagues that the process is probably what is the major issue. I disagree with my colleagues that we don't comment on design, because we comment on design when we want to comment on design. So I was pleased that Councillor Rees addressed the design. I think there is a positive move afoot from the government after the huge backlash about the design. Tanya talked about the civic and cultural nature of Fed Square, and I agree with you, but I'm not opposed to an Apple store going into Fed Square. When the building was originally built, they considered a Borders bookstore. They even considered an Apple store. So the idea that you can't have a commercial operation in Fed Square is something that I don't agree with. We have restaurants, we have taxi, we have transport, we have restaurants like Chocolate Buddha in there. And it is important that even though it is a civic space, that it does go some way to paying for itself. It is losing money, and we could argue about sort of the operational model, and we've happily done that previously. We could look at other ways of gaining efficiency for that operation. But a state government does have to look at the bottom line, because you can't just say, well, let's just jump in and completely fund that. We've had strong and robust meetings with Apple themselves, with the state government, and even with Don Bates. I think where we've got to is that probably, as Councillor Rees said, that there isn't too many people that support the current design, and I'm really hopeful that that's what we're going to see movement on. On the lack of community consultation, I don't know why there is a fear around community consultation. Councillor Rees was right in talking about the West Melbourne Structure Plan, that bringing the community on board and giving them the information that you have can often result in fantastic outcomes. So I still hope that there's room to move on the public consultation aspects, probably from a master plan perspective of Fed Square, and even considering Fed Square East and what happens there. So I'm comfortable, very comfortable with the first three, 1.1, 1.2, 1.3. I thank Councillor Leppard for his movement on 1.4. Like Councillor Leelu, I was uncomfortable in directing the Legislative Council to take a form of action, but I acknowledge that the sort of the jarring nature of the debate and the design is such that Councillor Leppard wanted to take decisive action, and so I think he was warranted in his initial move to be far stronger in 1.4, but I appreciate his work with fellow councillors to reach what I think will be a well-supported decision. Any other speakers? Councillor Pinner-Mortimer.
Just a quick one, Councillor Wood. We've known for long now that the economic viability of Fed Square has diminished. And I'd be looking for, if this Apple store does go ahead, which it will, I'm sure, I'd be looking for some concessions to the community. For example, the Chinese community, to stage Chinese New Year over one weekend, it costs them in excess of $70,000. I'd be looking for some great concessions from Fed Square for the future for our cultural groups.
Thanks, Councillor Pinner-Mortimer. Any other speakers? Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. And just a couple of things to wrap up. On reflection, maybe the reason I said we don't comment on design is because I knew that if I started on design, my speech would lengthen by double. I'm happy to actually maybe take out temple-like and put in Pizza Hut pagoda-like. I enjoyed Councillor Rees's contribution. And, of course, the reason why the public is so outraged above and beyond the process is that it is such a radical concept that hasn't had any chance whatsoever to be socialised amongst the community, to be put out there for consideration before a decision was made, and so the issues of process and design do, of course, go hand in hand. Through my Apple iPad, I received a message in the course of the debate that I might have misled the council in my opening remarks. Some of the pro formas that came through on the Do Gooder app were not in favour of the Apple Store, so I think it's a well above 98% sort of success rate there, but I may have misled the council earlier on. And the one other thing I did forget to mention early is that, and Councillor Rees reminds me of this, is that we do need a new entrance for Metro Rail, and none of that has gone through any public consultation yet. Two observations there. One is that the State Cabinet will be looking very carefully at their experience with Apple before they decide to announce an entrance as a fait accompli. Two, why not save face, bundle these two projects together, reopen the question and ask Melburnians what they think for Federation Square, knowing that there are two major projects on the table. Everyone can save face and we can get to a better outcome. If there's no commitment to a redesign process with some public consultation, Melburnians will be furious, and I hope that the state government realises that. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Leppett. I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? I declare that carried unanimously. In accordance with Council's meeting procedures code, I understand that Councillor Watts may want to make... Oh, sorry. My apologies. Thank you. Item 7.3, notice of motion, Councillor Leppett. He's filling up the agenda well and truly. The electronic gaming machine licence renewals. And I call on a councillor to move a motion with respect.
I move it as it has appeared on the notice.
Thank you. And I call for a seconder, and I'm happy to second that. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you. I just got to get it up here on my iPad again. Thank you, Apple. So, in a nutshell, electronic gaming machine venues, I'll refer to them as pokey venues from here on in, other than Crown, of course, which is in a special category of its own, have until the 28th of February to tell the VCGLR, if I've got the acronym right, to whether or not they would like a 20-year extension on their existing pokies entitlements from 2022 to 2042. Now, that is a revenue issue for the state government. The state government is quite keen to get the deposits for these licence extensions here and now. It's also a political issue for the state government by taking this issue off the table as early before the state government as possible, whilst not burdening the next couple of terms of parliament with the reopening of this question. I'm very cynical about the way that these decisions are being made, and I think we all should be, because it is quite a bad way of going about the extension of pokey contracts. And I don't know that it's really an issue that has been properly ventilated in the press. A few people know about this, but I don't believe that it's something that most Melburnians would be aware of. So we have an opportunity here for a little bit of leadership, and that is to write to, there's not many of them, but to write to the pokies venues in our municipality and do that publicly by doing a motion here today so that our community knows that we are taking this issue seriously, and asking them to voluntarily opt for a significantly lower number of pokies entitlements below what they're currently operating for that period 2022 to 2042. Any that do, we will congratulate. Any that don't, we will remind the community of the losses that are inflicted, the very, very harmful, the harm that's inflicted on our communities from the terrible effects of some forms of gambling, and we will put that in a media statement in March. Now, that is unusual for us to do. It's on the back of another quite unusually politically direct motion with Apple, and it's unusual for me to bundle two in the same meeting. But I'm glad that I've had good discussions with colleagues about how to come to something that I'm hoping people can live with, and that we can take the opportunity as early in the year, before that 28th of February deadline, to take some leadership here and to encourage, with a bit of a stick, maybe a bit more than a carrot, some of our operators to voluntarily do the right thing. Part two of the motion does what we agreed in October to do, which is to constantly advocate for bringing the central city, which is currently without a municipal cap on electronic gaming machines, into the municipal cap. Now, that's not going to cap pokies at current rates. In fact, probably far from it. But it would demonstrate from government that a cap is appropriate. The central city is currently the only part in the state without either a municipal or regional cap, or crown, which is, again, is a category of its own, because of course it is. But since the no cap policy was introduced, the city is now home to tens of thousands of residents, which wasn't the case when the no caps policy was there. This is a community. There are aspects of this community which are very vulnerable to pokies, and the number of pokie machine venues in the municipality should be capped. That is already City of Melbourne policy. I'm just taking the opportunity while we're talking about pokies to ask that we write to all parties asking them to make an election year commitment. This was the most exciting bit. That's unfortunate. And so I commend the motion, and thank you, Acting Lord Mayor, for seconding it.
I may have been sending a message, Councillor Leppert. excellent work on this motion. I agree with the fact that we need to bring our city into the cap, and as you've rightly said, that doesn't mean that there's still not licences which can be taken up inside that cap. We know the harm that problem gambling does to the people who have the issue, but also to the families around them, and also its links to family violence are quite clear. I want to thank our officers for their great work in setting the foundations for this motion, essentially, with their work around the endorsement of the electronic gaming decision-making framework by this committee last year. So thank you to officers, and thank you to Councillor Leppert for his work. Any speakers against? Any speakers for? Is that Councillor Leppert or you? Or is that just... Okay, I'll just raise your hand, not just a pen in the air, because I'm just not sure if you're writing something. Councillor Leepu.
While I'm supportive of, you know, Councillor Leppert's, I do look, you know, the stick that we're hitting our business with, and I think, because I'm not very into the activism and, you know, the forcing of, I guess, you know, especially our business, who is the, you know, the heart of our, I guess, city. I do hope, you know, we will come to some resolve. I do hope that they will support it. But the fact is, you know, we can't really... I'm not in the, you know, process of forcing someone to go about doing it. So I hope that there will be something sensitive come out of it. I think the business have a right, and I think they should have a way to look at other revenues. And I think that this... And Councillor Leppert does provide, in this motion, an alternative way, and we will support that.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor Francis Gilley.
Just to acknowledge a couple of things. One is that much of the information and comment on this is work done by the Alliance for Gambling Reform. It's really supportive. You do need to focus on this. You do need to speak about it. You do need to push it out. It's really tough. They've been going a long time. Tim's been doing this now for 20 years, speaking about this stuff, and it's really important, and it's a hard graft. I think the second thing is that... this isn't... we've got two addiction problems here. One is the addiction problem that actually machines are designed to be addictive. They absolutely are in their majority in the poorest parts of our cities, and therefore we are raising these funds from the poorest part of people using machines that are addictive, that actually you can get to the point like being alcoholic, where you actually absolutely have no control. And I think the other thing, we've got another addiction problem, is that successive state governments are absolutely addicted to this revenue. It's the only free and incumbent revenue of any significant size that the state government gets to be able to deliver the things that it wants to deliver. And actually, we have got to let go of that, and we have got to recognise that that money is coming from our most vulnerable citizens. And so I'm really grateful for this. I'm really grateful for the support and to all of those that for many years have been reminding us about the cost of gambling in our society.
Councillor Leppert, do you want to close?
One thing which is Councillor Francis Gilley reminded me of, which is to acknowledge the work of the Alliance for Gambling Reform. Heavily reliant this motion is on data from them. It's publicly available, but obviously I've been assisted in putting this forward. I admire the work that they do and am reminded, as Councillor Francis Gilley says, that it's motions like these, perhaps in quieter media cycles, that keep the issues raised. I'm hoping that the mid-March opportunity for a public reinforcement of our policy that pokies do harm and that we try to ameliorate that harm for all the reasons that Councillor Francis Gilley said is a good opportunity for us to take advantage of a quieter news cycle.
I'm happy to put that to the vote. All those in favour? I declare that carried unanimously. In accordance with our Council's meeting procedures code, I understand Councillor Watts may want to make a personal explanation. Councillor Watts.
Thank you. I'm aware I did ask
you
to speak.
Sorry, you just need to turn the microphone on.
I'm just making the point as I distribute my personal explanation, as it is called. Would you mind helping me with that? That I did request to speak after Councillor Cathy Oak, out of respect for her, I did not imagine that I would have to wait several hours to give my personal explanation.
Sorry, Councillor. I just have to make the point that this is the right point for a personal explanation to occur. So please go ahead and read your personal explanation.
The recent allegations by two female councillors and media reports have served to remind me of my own experience 6 years ago when I made a complaint against Robert Dore for bullying. Common causal factors within the workplace culture gave rise to these allegations. I find this distressing. Recent research is unequivocal. Significant costs arise from workplace harassment. Consider the immense costs associated with the current allegations: personal, professional, legal, lost productivity and reputational damage. Regardless of the outcome of the Freckleton investigation, unless the underlying causal factors are faced, the problems at my workplace, Town Hall, will persist. To quote journalist Tracy Spicer, a culture-wide, generations-long epidemic of workplace sexual harassment and assault doesn't persist without a broad network of complicity composed of individuals with varying degrees of knowledge and culpability. The City of Melbourne Act is itself a causal factor, spawning a council culture of entitlement, elitism and impunity shaped by those playing political games and those with economic influence, leaving local constituent concerns at the margins. A gerrymander designed to prioritise the big end of town above residents and small business people. In my opinion, led by Robert Doyle over three terms, the workplace culture resembles a political milieu of Spring Street, characterised by risk management, confidentiality, media optics, unanimity and expediency rather than optimal transparency and disclosure and service to constituents. Consider the flow-on effect of the Team Doyle cabinet-style caucus meetings, which are inherently exclusive, an absence of robust council-wide debate, and an extraordinarily missing pattern of unanimity in block voting compounded this term with an absolute majority. We are aware of what's divided the Doyle Council, but given that all councillors sign the ostensibly binding councillor code of conduct, I am deeply dismayed to reflect that if any councillor aware of this alleged misconduct had promptly fulfilled their obligations under the Local Government Act, the OH&S Act and the councillor code, then the current miserable situation for all concerned and the damage to our city may well have been averted. I gather that the scope of the Freckleton investigation may not reveal whether or not any councillors stood idly by over months during which Tessa Sullivan's distress grew. Turning now to the administration's role in shaping workplace culture, I am personally and professionally aghast that 6 weeks after my bullying complaints, processes remain seriously deficient. Consider the absurdity of the reporting processes faced by Tessa Sullivan.
Sorry, Councillor, just for the record, 6 years, not 6 weeks. Sorry, just to correct that.
Thank you. Consider the absurdity of the reporting processes faced by Tessa Sullivan. Initially, a formal complaint process had to be made to the CEO, who was then required to immediately inform the Lord Mayor. Under Council Code of Conduct, any complaint against the Lord Mayor must first report to the deputy member of the Doyle team, who must then meet with the complainant and the Lord Mayor to resolve the complaint. Protection for alleged victims, where those in power are involved, is as inadequate today as it was 6 years ago. Distressed councillors can opt to endure, face a daunting and costly complaints process, or ultimately, as in the case of Tessa Sullivan, resign. It is heartening that the administration is now set to tackle deficiencies in relevant acts and codes. Yet it persists with a defensive and political stance that it already models best practices in transparency and disclosure and in workplace harassment, which is inappropriate in the current context. Changes within council may be more problematic. The status quo has served Team Doyle very well until now. Entrenched allegiances, established routines, and retaining a large voting bloc remain. Time will tell. But my hope is that this appalling episode at least triggers change, greater collegiality, trust, genuine debate, and a proper balance between the conduct of this local council and its role as a state capital. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor. Under the Meeting Procedures Code, sadly, there is no right of reply to a personal explanation. There's one item of proposal. That concludes the items of general business for consideration in the open session, and there is one item of proposed urgent business, and I'd like to move that the item on screen meets the criteria for urgent business, and I ask a councillor to second that. Councillor Riley, all those in favour? I declare that carried unanimously, and I'd now like to move the motion displayed on the screen. I call for a seconder. Councillor Reese. There's a raffle. So this relates to our very successful trade missions. This trade mission will go to Japan and to China. Our officers have been working extremely hard on these annual trade missions, and these missions result in excellent business for those parties that are able to attend those trade missions. A couple of changes which have arisen as a result of the Lord Mayor's resignation yesterday that require urgent attention is that Councillor Louis will be the lead for that mission. He has excellent networks, fantastic contacts, and great experience in the trade missions previously. And he will lead us well on that mission. And joining as the third councillor on that trade mission is Councillor Susan Riley, again, someone who has extensive experience in city business, but also in the small business sphere, and will represent extremely well the businesses that will attend that trade mission. Doors are opened, contacts are made, and often deals are signed as a result of these trade missions. With a close to $100 billion central city economy, these trade missions are absolutely critical, and we thank all three councillors, Councillor Liu, Councillor Louis, and Councillor Riley, for agreeing to go on this trade mission, represent our city, and join with other members on the trade mission in making it very successful. Councillor Reese.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. Obviously, this had to be a bit of quick and fancy footwork to update the delegation of councillors who are going on this very important business mission. And I guess it was a reminder to me that we do have some great talent on our council. Councillor Louis, with his extensive years of experience in doing business in Asia, will, I'm sure, ably lead the delegation. Councillor Philip Lee Liu, also with his very extensive delegation experience working in Asia, will be an irreplaceable asset as part of the team. and Councillor Riley with her portfolio responsibilities of small business, retail and hospitality, I think will bring a very, very important dimension to the team. So well done on pulling together such a good team.
Thanks, Councillor Reach. Any other speakers to this item? Councillor Lee Lu.
I just like to welcome Councillor Susan Riley to the trip. I think she will make a great addition to the trip. She's been a former Deputy Lord Mayor, and I'm sure her experience and insight will be very valuable. Thanks.
Councillor Lee Lu, any other speakers to this item? If not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. A 15-minute period will now be provided for members of the public to ask questions. As was iterated in the opening, the question shouldn't be greater than 90 seconds in duration. A bell will ring to signal the time allocated to you has finished. I now invite questions from members of the public and remind that the public, they shouldn't make any comments that are considered objectionable, offensive, defamatory or inappropriate if you wish to ask questions about the investigation. So please raise your hand and Shane, welcome to come up to the lectern and ask your question.
Thank you. I've got a couple of matters. First one with my Docklands News hat on regarding the Westgate raised freeway issue. With all your ambition to traffic calm West North Melbourne, put a moratorium on future development, local roads, convert arterials to local, is it unfair or unreasonable to conclude that that comes at the expense of Docklands with the extra traffic expected via the Wurundjeri Way extension?
I think it's fair to say that we've prosecuted the case solidly, Shane. Harbour Esplanade is an absolute critical consideration in this. I'm on the record as saying that the West Gate tunnel won't be good for Docklands in my view. I think when we talk about those local roads, that we'll continue to prosecute the argument of any roads other than Wurundjeri Way not being widened. I'm speaking on my feet a little bit here, but I have the CEO's support in continuing to prosecute that argument on behalf of Docklands.
Not sure exactly what that means. I'm asking whether Docklands would expect more traffic via Wurundjeri Way.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. Okay. Yep. The other issue that I wanted to ask about is the election that will be coming, the by-election. What's the council's understanding of the process and the timing?
I'll refer to the Manager of Governance on the election issues.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. The Local Government Act specifies, as you may already know, Shane, that the election has to be held within 100 days of the resignation. The resignation was received yesterday. That allows 100 days from yesterday. However, it is a requirement of the Local Government Act that it be held on a Saturday. So the answer to the question is the election will be held on the 12th of May or earlier. But it hasn't been set yet. It's not our role to set the date. That's the role of the Minister for Local Government.
And what about the candidacy requirements? Is it, if, for example, the Deputy Lord Mayor, the Acting Lord Mayor wanted to run, does he have to resign to run?
No. Through you, Chair. No, he doesn't. The City of Melbourne Act provides that any of the councillors can in fact run for the position that's now vacant, which is Lord Mayor, and should they, any or more, be unsuccessful, they will revert back to their position. So if a councillor ran, they would revert back to a councillor if they're unsuccessful. If the Deputy Lord Mayor ran and was unsuccessful, he would still be the Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thank you.
Thanks, Shane. There's a question just here.
John O'Brien. Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor and councillors, and thank you for your recent correspondence. My issues are pollution and waste management. At present, we've got near the corner of Exhibition and Little Lonsdale Street a restaurant that's been emitting foul smoke up to 6 metres high for more than a year, and staff members have been there, and we get a lame duck attitude back. It's still happening. They say we've looked at the cleaning different issues have happened there. But now I've got a building of apartments right beside that vent, and they can't open their windows even now on a hot day because of this, the smoke and the foul odour. Also, even on the Brady site, the workers there are saying that they've got to take a deep breath every now and then in a different zone. We probably, as an issue, Hayward Lane, which I've spoken last time I was here, is a real issue with cigarette butts, beer barrels, cardboard, rubbish, right up nearly to Latrobe, especially to Little Lonsdale Street. Nothing much has been done. My suggestion when I spoke to one of your staff was, why can't you put some cigarette butt holders on the wall of 150 Lonsdale? Nothing's happened. Finally, probably after paying $16,500 worth of council rates for investors today, I'd like to see something happen in a way that you as councillors might turn around and say, all right, there should be two or three staff people that go around and check the jobs.
Thanks, John. So that's with the two issues, the waste issue and also the exhaust fan.
Checking the jobs after they've been allocated isn't happening.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Thank you for your correspondence. I'm absolutely aware of that. With the exhaust fan issue, we're in a situation where that case in particular, and I'm sure you're aware of this, complies. And that's not to say the current standards or requirements are right for all eternity, but we assess them as they are now under the standards that apply. I've
6 metres in the air.
John, I'll just answer your question. If you want to take a seat, that'd be great. So we'll look again into that issue. Officers will get out again, and if it complies, unfortunately, our hands are tied in some respects, because if you comply with the requirements, there's not a lot that we can do. We can attempt to work with the owner of the premise and try and facilitate a voluntary outcome, and I would sort of volunteer that as well. In relation to the waste issue, it's a constant issue in a growing city. I think we do an extremely good job in what is a pretty challenging environment. Nearly a million people a day come into our city to use the central city, not to mention during major events. I agree with you, cigarette butts are an absolute pet hate of mine. We have got a large number of cigarette butt receptacles throughout the city. We're looking at innovative ways of joining with companies like TerraCycle to actually recycle those cigarette butts. I think we've done some amazing things on waste. That's not saying that we can't do more. On your particular issue, I'm happy to go into it again, ask officers where we're at with it, and come back to you on that.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, John. Any other questions? Just here. Just your name and your question. Thank you.
James Lesh, like Tanya Davidge, also Citizens for Melbourne. Councillors, Acting Lord Mayor, to borrow a phrase from Steve Jobs, one last thing. I commend the council for coming out for Fed Square tonight and for the citizens of Melbourne and Victoria, but I want to throw down the gauntlet with this.
James, sorry, yes. I just make sure it's a question, because
I can assure you I have a question.
It can't be a submission to an item we've heard, that's all.
It's not a submission.
Okay, great, thank you.
I respectfully request the council also help facilitate the public process over Fed Square. So that's the debate that the Andrews government and Apple have refused to allow Melburnians and Victorians to have. The debate which I think needs to make a distinction between corporatisation and commercialisation. A few public-spirited cafes and restaurants is commercialisation. Apple is different. It's corporatisation. And it's a fundamental change to the nature of...
James, sorry, come on.
I have one very straightforward
question. Just your question, thanks.
Okay. In the great civic tradition, would the councillors be willing to lead the debate over the future of Fed Square, to hold a public forum at Town Hall, another of the city's symbolic civic hearts, before it's too late to give our citizens a say? And how about a commitment to do it tonight and to hold this public forum before the end of the month?
Thanks for your question, James. Obviously, we absolutely understand. You can take a seat, because I just don't want to get into a debate on an issue that we've already debated. Obviously, Councillor Leppert's motion was a strong one, which was unanimously supported.
And that message will be sent to government on top of all the meetings that we've been having on behalf of ratepayers, on behalf of the citizens of Melbourne. I can absolutely assure you that officers, councillors have been doing a power of work to get to a better outcome with the Apple Store. In terms of running a public consultation process, what I'm really mindful of is running a sort of proxy public consultation that actually has no impact on the final outcome. So essentially you build up all this kind of sort of belief and hope, and then we don't have any ability to compel the state government on their site to take any form of action. What I think we should do is to continue to advocate strongly for essentially a second bite at the master plan for Fed Square, and I think we may have more success on considering the station entrance. There's a number of other interventions that are being talked about, and obviously the Apple Store being one of those. I can absolutely assure you that obviously we're hearing the community angst around this. We share the angst around the process and also around the design, and we'll continue to push that argument as hard as we can in whatever forum we can. Thank you. I think I answered the question.
I'll just add to that by saying business is over, so we couldn't actually do that here and now because no notice has been given. But I support the sentiments, but we won't be able to do it tonight.
I think it sort of concurs with the idea of running a public consultation on something that we can't actually have an action on, and that's important. I don't want to give you a false sort of avenue that's not going to have an impact on the actual outcome. Any other questions? If not, thank you very much for your long attention and attendance. And I call on a councillor to move the motion displayed on the screen. Thank you, Councillor Riley. Is there a seconder for that? I'll second it. Would you like us to close the meeting first, Councillor Watts? Or? Okay, we'll just note that Councillor Watts left the meeting at 8:43. I'm happy to second that motion. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. I wish to thank members of the public for their interest and attendance and declare the open meeting closed at 8:43 p.m.